Welcome everyone. We're back in the team car, and we're back for episode 113. Unlucky for some, a difficult second century of podcasting. Welcome to the show, and we are on our season review show. Much promised and less delivered, but now we are ready and raring to go on a almost frosty and chilly Lincolnshire morning. It's all good, and the weather forecast is set fair for this week, so there could be opportunities for mileage, you never know. But first, we wanted to get our review show done and in the can, and we will look to put the results online as well. In terms of the categories, we've got top three riders of the year. We'll do that in reverse order. I'm wearing a bow tie, so you know, it's proper awards ceremony. So we'll do that, but before that, we've got the race of the year, which is kind of a tricky one this year, because there's a lot of races that kind of stood out as being good, but not too many that stood out as being great. In terms of wins, you'd look at Nibali soloing in Milan-San Remo. You'd look at the other end of the season and Pino doing the same in Lombardy. In the big spring classics, you could say that Jungels' win in Liège was Bob Jungels' win in Liège was impressive, but he kind of didn't even really attack. He just rode, and people behind didn't ride till it was too late. You can see, you know, Sagan's was quite an exciting long range win in Roubaix, and Terpstra's was a good solid attack in an unusual spot in to win Flanders. So of the big races, it's kind of difficult really to see. The world, you can't really pick a doper, an unrepentant doper, as your ride of the year. So in terms of race and ride, we're going to be quite boring really and go for the whole of the Vuelta and Simon Yates, mainly because I think there was quite a bit of suspense building in the final week of the Vuelta because of what had happened to him in the Giro. There'd been all the kind of frustration and quelled feelings of the first week when he literally just couldn't help himself from attacking off the front. And it was just an enthralling watch, especially towards the end when of the final couple of stages, when Enric Mas was getting stronger and Miguel Angel Lopez was getting stronger, Valverde and Quintana were imploding. It was just fascinating. There were subplots all over the place, and through all of that, Yates, as his team started to fade in some ways, while some riders started to go backwards, other riders started to progress and come forwards, get better form, his brother being a prime example. And it's just a shame, really, that they all threw so much into that Vuelta that they didn't quite have anything really left for the World Championships, and it was left to Pete Kenyuk to drive us home in that. So, yeah, the Vuelta gets that collade. I mean, the other races that were considered were the Tour of Britain, actually. Now, you know, I'm quite a fan of Euro racing, so it takes quite a lot. You know, as long-time listeners will know, it's took me two or three editions of the Tour of Yorkshire to even believe that it should be on the calendar. So throw a Tour of Britain in, a bit windy, rainy weather. Yeah, you know, a team time trial, not interested. But actually, the race proved to be really, really fascinating. Hugh Carthy was a great example of a rider attacking, you know, trying to win the race with little care about whether or not he lost it. In Alaphilippe, there was a real good, credible, you know, winner building his form for the Worlds. We had some, you know, exciting stages down in Devon. We had the summit finish in the Winlacker Pass. So from that perspective, the Tour of Britain pretty much had everything. And, you know, you look back maybe 10, 12 years to, you know, this incarnation of the Tour of Britain when it came back online. There was some pretty long transfers, which, you know, still exist, but at the end of those long transfers now are stages that are interesting that riders want to ride. And I think it's only a matter of time before the Tour of Britain throws open, you know, they might have a Rutland Melton style stage, you know, with some gravel included, as seems to be the vogue at the moment. So yeah, that'll be really interesting to see what they do with the Tour of Britain, because this year's was such a good race. Just while we're on the subject briefly of Britain, we brought you news of the fact that we're going to have a second Pro Classic round these parts from Bourne, taking in Grantham and Stamford, so kind of just adjacent to the roads that the Rutland Cycle Classic is held on. Not too far away from here, over the border in Norfolk, is where the British Championships will be held next year. So we'll give you more on that when we get it. But just this felt like the most appropriate point in the podcast to mention that, in case you've not caught up with that news. Okay, so Rider of the Year. Now, as is always the way in these sort of categories, I started off with a list. It wasn't super long, maybe 8-9 riders this year. And as is kind of the way, there needs to be a sort of solid reason, you know, why all of them are in where they're in. So the third placed rider, you won't know possibly, is a Latvian called Chris Nylands of the Israel Cycling Academy. Now, why is he in there? Okay, his reasons are probably, they're threefold really. The first one is purely, you know, purely from personal, you know, reasons, was that when we were on holiday in Girona, we saw him out training a couple of times. He was very easily distinguishable in the Latvian national champions jersey, and on that beautiful De Rosa bike. And we saw him a couple of times out and about in the mountains around while we were touring around in the car having a great holiday. What we then did was do a bit of research on his career. You know, who is the Latvian champion? What's he done? And from that, interestingly, again, we got to the position where we ended up rewatching Milan San Remo. And when you rewatch that climb of the Poggio, not only is Nylands in there as the finish, you know, and the final climb going towards the finish, it's ultimately his attack. He actually kicks off the move that Nibali goes over to win Milan San Remo. So you look at that, wow, this guy's got a bit in his locker. He could, you know, he could well be a decent rider going forward. So there was various sort of Spanish stage races, Italian stage races and things where he, you know, his little cheeky chops popped up on Eurosport in a break or driving the peloton, which we liked. And then came probably the latest hipster classic, the Dwars Het Hageland, promoted by Nick Noyens, who's a former Tour of Flanders winner. It's kind of taken on the role of the Trobro Leon, which runs on, you know, like vineyard paths and farm tracks. This runs on canal towpaths in the Netherlands. And Nylands won. And he won in what in cycling terms would be the grand manner. Maybe some of you will remember the Tour of Turkey a few years ago, where Ilio Kayser of Quickstep was off the front, last hairpin bend, managed to roll a tyre and fall. He managed to get back up, get the bike going, get over the line and still win. Nylands' win was similar to that, although he had his troubles a bit further out. But a couple of sectors from the end of the gravelled towpaths, he had problems, puncture, didn't panic, got a wheel, neutral service, I believe. Got back on and then powered away from the remains of the breakaway that were trying to get over to him, and won the day, which was a fantastic ride, and kind of cements our feelings that this is a guy who's worth watching. The last time I made a bold prediction like this, by the way, was when I was writing for Road CC website, and I predicted in 2012 that Thomas de Gendt and Edvald Boasenhagen would dominate Flanders and Roubaix for years to come. So I've not got great form. I mean, they have done really well, but, you know, I could pick a rider, but not necessarily the disciplines that they would excel in. So, you know, I expect Nylands to win the King of the Mountains or something. So yeah, an interesting guy, certainly one with a classics pedigree, certainly one with a fair bit in the engine, fair bit in the tank, looks great on the bike, and thoroughly deserving of our third place and slash up and coming rider, we'll call him. So well done, Chris. If you're listening, I'm sure you are. The runners-up spot, it goes to Simon Yates, predictably enough that he was in the top three. If he'd have done a Giro Vuelta double, he'd have been hard to look past, I suppose. But what a good rider. The way that he capitulated in the Giro actually made him a little bit more endearing as a figure. We can talk about the fact that he's come up through the National Clarions, or the Clarion system, with Barry Clarion, and the fact that I ride with Fenland Clarion makes him, you know, in my mind, a teammate. In many people's minds, to be fair, a teammate, and I suppose technically in some ways he is. But Simon did really, really well. I enjoyed listening to the BBC podcast from a club meeting of Barry Clarion riders and family and friends and stuff, listening to him nail that Vuelta win. That was one of the highlights of the season. But it all comes back to how he folded in Italy, completely folded in Italy. He didn't necessarily get worked over that much. He was gone before Froome's, you know, excellent work. with Froome's excellent work, which was questioned by those of you who listened to the Flanders travel log last week will have heard that we were on a brewery tour in Oudenaarde with an Antwerp-based cycling club, and all they wanted to ask me was how I felt about Froome, which stays off the record. But yeah, Froome managed to get that attack and win the Giro, but Yates, you know, was his reputation grew in defeat, and then in the Vuelta, the fact that he was desperately trying to curb those attacking instincts and that desire to win the race by blasting everyone out of the water showed a newfound level of maturity, and he was the right, you know, he was the right winner. You couldn't put a case for Valverde, you certainly couldn't for Quintana. And Mas and Lopez were probably just that little bit too raw. So Yates, a thoroughly deserving runner-up in this awards. You wonder what next for him. Is the Tour de France going to be his aim next year? And if it is, will he be able to topple Froome? Because I don't see Thomas as a multi Tour de France winner. Will he be able to topple Froome and maybe you know, one or two others who will look to get it a bit more on track come July? So, Nylund 3, Yates 2, and number one, a multi-winner of this award, Tom Dumoulin. And you might look and say, Tom Dumoulin, he didn't really win anything. And you'd be right. Pipped at the Giro by Froome, pipped at the Tour de France by Thomas, pipped in the world's time trial by Rowan Dennis, and also didn't quite have the legs to sprint when he got over Hull in the world's road race. So why does that make him the rider of the year? Well, because he was in the mix for all of those races. He's won, you know, fairly consistent thing. Just because he's Tom Dumoulin, he's amazing. You hope that this is a guy who wins a Tour de France. He ended the Dutch long, long Grand Tour drought by winning the Giro last year, despite all of his last week stomach travails. This year, he's backed that up. He's been there in one-day races when needed. He's maybe not been the one-day rider that Romain Bardet has been. Bardet, of course, went close to that top three with his rides in Strada Bianchi and the Worlds, and he dominated some hilly French Cup events. But Dumoulin's been there or thereabouts when he's been needed. And he's also, you know, in the Grand Tours, he is the man most likely to succeed Froome. And you wonder, with some of the challenges that his Sunweb team have got in terms of keeping riders and the fact that they're swapping bikes, from Giant to Cervelo, and they've not been able to keep Simon Geschke, things like that, you wonder whether a Dumoulin to Sky situation is probably only a year away. So if it doesn't work out for him next year, I see him being on the transfer market and going somewhere else. Potentially a bigger team. Could you call it a bigger team? So I think that there's that element. to his game. He's been supported well. Kelderman's been a good rider when he's been fit. But you look at it and he's almost trying to do it Greg LeMond style on his own. Like LeMond in 89 with ADR. He had Yann Musée, didn't he, by the end of the race. So Dumoulin, epic ride in the Giro. You know, he was the rider that turned the screw on Froome and thought he'd put him out. He turned the screw on Yates, got a bit of time back on Yates the day before he properly blew, and you felt that he was the man who was going to inherit the pink jersey. But it wasn't quite to be for him this year. But his Giro was fantastic, and then he went to France, and then he backed it up in the Tour de France. He was the rider on the climbs, the most steady rider on the climbs. He didn't do necessarily anything super flashy, but he didn't do anything, you know, negative. He raced the race, and obviously was there for the time trial. Maybe he'll be looking over his shoulder at people like Primoz Roglic, as much as looking sort of up at Froome. But Dumoulin for me is a great rider, and he backed that up at the Worlds because he was tired. He was, you know, clearly on his knees in the time trial. There's plenty of pictures and plenty of footage of how much suffering he was doing to get to the finish. And you know, Dennis was banging form and had made it his objective. But then from somewhere in the road race, Dumoulin found the strength of character, almost, you would say, to dig in when it was easier for riders to go backwards. You know, Pino was going backwards, Alaphilippe was going backwards, you know, Miguel Angel Lopez was going backwards, Valgren had gone off the front but was sliding now straight off the back as that gradient bit. And even though he wasn't with Woods and Bardet and Valverde when they went over the top, and even though it would have been easier to kind of get to the finish for fourth place and get to the beach and he'd have still had massive, you know, respect, he produced a descent and a pursuit that probably not many riders in the world other than him could actually produce. And he got back on, and there was that agonising moment round the last corner where he went as if he was going to try and surprise them, and Valverde clocked him. And I think at that moment we were off our seat willing him, come on Tom, come on, but he didn't quite have the legs. And that's fair enough, you know, after the season that he'd had, it's not unacceptable not to have the legs to outsprint Valverde. And he might be disappointed. He might look back on that season, the season, and say, well, I didn't get that big win, I didn't, you know, necessarily back up a Giro win. But he did, in my eyes, he did. He backed that up with podium finishes on two Grand Tours, and, you know, top four finishes in the world in both of the big disciplines. So it'll be interesting to see how he focuses, whether he focuses solely on the Tour de France. I don't necessarily think we're going to have that whole will he ride, won't he ride saga of last winter. Now he's not the defending Giro champion, there's not as much pressure on him to go there. So if he does feel that he doesn't necessarily need to do the Giro as preparation for the Tour, you might see him go for things like the Dauphiné, which are well within his capabilities to win. So it's going to be interesting. We'll not do our predictions just yet, because they were rubbish, I think, this year. I'm not even going to bother going back and checking those. So yeah, there it is, Tom Dumoulin, Rider of the Year, in the Fendrian Cast Rider of the Year, and as we say, richly deserved. And let's hope that it's as difficult to choose some winners next year as it's been this year. It's shaping up to be an interesting season. We have plenty of debates going on as to whether or not cycling needs to modernise again, and whether or not routes need to be modernised and made more exciting, whether the team model needs to change, how licensing should and shouldn't work. But in essence, it's still, you know, the best sport in the world. And while it's very easy to criticise, and, you know, we'll criticise where it's felt necessary, it's not a problem. But cycling is a pretty good sport. It's very exciting to watch. The scenery is magnificent. What's not to like? And I think people, as we get older, we all hark back to a day where, you know, almost the like 1994, where Gewiss were putting 1, 2, 3 in Flesher alone by riding everyone off their wheel. But they weren't, those days were, it might have been exciting to watch at the time, but it wasn't real. And keeping it real and keeping the athletes real is, that's the biggest challenge, because in the main, there's been a lot of rides this year which I would say have been fairly credible in their in their execution, and that's really important, because sponsors will come back, they will be interested. I read a piece in Pro Cycling magazine the other day saying about how important it is that people bear in mind that sponsors have always come in and out of the sport, just because BMC have left and Aqua Blue have folded. There's been plenty of examples like that. You can read Aqua Blue, you can read Le Groupe Mont in the mid 90s that was ended up being there and gone within like three quarters of a season, I think. Before that there was it Tonton Tapis, the Stephen Roach team, sponsored by a Belgian carpet manufacturer. They came and went, so there are always teams that will appear and disappear. That's the nature of the sport. It's what's important is that there's a queue of sponsors behind, and that there are people that are willing to invest. We need to find the next Andy Reese, who's willing to put a 5-year plan in place to make his team successful, and it will happen. It's just a case of finding them. And I think people get het up on how late in the day it was Quickstep found a new sponsor. But maybe that happens a lot more than we actually know. It's a bit more public in this day and age. Maybe when Panasonic moved to Novomail in 1992 or 93, whenever it was, maybe that team was a lot closer to disappearing despite being one of the most successful teams in the world. So it can happen, so stay positive. Brilliant. Well, that's our show. So that's our end of year award show done and dusted. Interestingly, now we will be podcasting. We will be back fairly soon, hopefully. We are putting together a show based on virtual cycling. Now, I think on this podcast I might have even said the words that I can't see any point in virtual cycling, and I've actually been thrust into giving it a go. And to be honest, well, let's wait and see. But there is a virtual cycling special for this show coming soon. So I hope you stay tuned for that. And thank you for listening to episode 113 of the Fendrian Cast. Please like us, share us, do all that kind of stuff. We are going to have to change the web address based on the fact that Brexit is getting rid of the EU suffix. So, yeah, brilliant. Good to have loads of kit with that on. We will be in touch, and we'll update you on all that kind of stuff in the usual channels. So thanks very much for listening, and have a good day.